I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio. And you're listening to The Functional Nerds, episode number 153.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. I am John Anelio. I am a musician and a songwriter and a composer and all that jazz. And you can check out my music over at johnanelio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at johnanelio. And once again, we are joined by Madeline Ashby. She is a science fiction writer and strategic foresight consultant living in Toronto. Her short fiction has appeared in Flurb, Nature, Escape Pod, and elsewhere. Her novels, VN and ID, are available from Angry Robot Books. Her nonfiction has appeared at BoingBoingTour.com and io9. You can find her online at MadelineAshby.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at MadelineAshby. Madeline, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is now your third appearance. I think you are getting up there in terms of, you know, our guest that's been on the most time. So that's
I'm like what Alec Baldwin is to
Yeah, two more, and then you're in the five time club, and
yeah,
then
you're the drunk guy.
Have to write more books.
you're the drunk guy in the lounge sucking down all the beer.
Actually, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, so
you got me.
So when Madeline gets on two more times, then she can join like Mer Lafferty and Mike Cole and a couple other people, and then we'll do a whole big sketch with all of them.
I'll get a special keychain.
Do you think we can get Steve Martin to come on and play the banjo for that?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I don't know if you totally off topic, but he just put out an album with Edie Brickell. That's great.
Yes.
It's a really good album. My wife and I have been listening to it.
What I am is what I am.
Yeah. Well, she's a great singer. And I read a really – and I think it's no secret that Steve Martin is an excellent banjo player. Like, he's legit player. It's not just a, I'm an actor doing my little vanity project. Like, he is a legit player that has respect from that community, from the bluegrass community. So he can really play. And he's done a lot of these sort of instrumental bluegrass albums that have been really well reviewed. And he I'm assuming he met Edie Brickell because Edie Brickell is married to Paul Simon. And I know Paul Simon.
Yeah, and actually that pissed me off because she married Paul Simon, and then she stopped making albums for a long time. It's like, what the hell?
Well, they had kids. She stayed home and she raised their kids. They have a couple kids, I think.
Stupid Paul Simon.
Paul Simon could have helped out around the house.
That's true. What's up with Paul Simon not raising those kids too?
Simon could have written some songs about doing dishes and picking up socks.
Yeah.
That could have happened.
Now you're playing some Steve Martin there. So their album is very good.
That is actually Steve Martin, Earl Scruggs, Glenn Duncan, Randy Scruggs. Vince Gill, Marty Stewart, Albert Lee, Paul Schaefer, Jerry Douglas, and Leon Russell all playing Foggy Mountain Breakdown.
Wow, that's quite a cast of characters there. Mm-hmm. But it's the album's pretty cool because it's I think Steve Martin would sort of like write some banjo music and sort of email the files to Edie Brickell, and Edie Brickell would write the melodies and write the words, and then they sort of collaborated or sort of cross country that way, and then they went in the studio and recorded a really nice. It's a little more mellow than a typical kind of bluegrass album, but if you like that sort of stuff, it's up on Spotify and everything. It's a really nice little album. So
Steve Martin is like. He's like a crazy triple threat because he's also a writer. He's also a novelist.
Yeah, he wrote, what was the L.A. Story? Or L.A.?
I don't know if he wrote L.A. Story, but...
Yeah, it became a movie.
No, I think he did. And then he wrote Shop Girl, which later he made into a movie with Claire Danes. Mm-hmm. And I think Jason Schwartzman, I think?
Yeah. I believe that's it,
And stuff. I'm blanking and...
If
I start typing and looking it up now, you'll hear the clickety clack of my fingers.
There was a movie that Steve Martin was in with Sarah Jessica Parker, all about Los Angeles.
That's LA Story.
He wrote that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did write that.
Yeah, no, he's an interesting guy, and I know he's very well versed in fine art. And
he's a jerk. Like a
We're all just
you know what? He's not. He's actually he's kind of a wild and crazy guy. But
yeah. And I remember an interview that when he was on David Letterman years ago, and he was talking about how their commonality was, you know, no substantial weight gain for the years. And like, it's funny if you see Steve Martin now and you see Steve Martin from 20, 30 years ago, he really doesn't look that much different because he went gray so early. And yeah. he hasn't really gained weight, you know, over is he that looks very much. Yeah.
Yeah.
A recent movie, movie that he did that I actually like was called The Big Year.
Oh, yeah. Was
and I never thought I would like that, but I ended up liking it. And it's with him, Owen Wilson and Jack Black. Huh. And you would think that it's like this wild comedy or something, but it's not. It's this very subtle kind of movie, and it's about these three guys who are into bird watching.
Right. Yeah.
And the idea of a big year is to watch or like catalog more birds than anybody else in a year.
Oh, okay. So you got to catch them all.
Right, and so that's these three guys just traveling all over the place trying to get, you know, all the birds.
To outbird each other.
To outbird each other, yes.
Very good. Well, you know, we're sort of like picking movies and stuff like that, so we might as well get on to our picks of the week then.
Picks of the week.
Patrick, why don't you go first this week? Why don't you do your pick of the week?
Okay, so what I'm picking this week is it's a show that's coming back on the air. It's one of the shows that I like, and I know Lisa Pate Spindler likes it as well. It's kind of it started off very light in the beginning, and it's as the character is growing, it's getting darker and darker and darker, and it's called Covert Affairs. And it's kind of a spy-fi series on USA. It stars mm-hmm. Piper Perabo. And like I said, when she first started, it was like her first, she's a spy. She comes to the CIA and it was kind of light and it was fun and she was having fun with everything. And as years have gone by and, you know, it's like this life is crashing down on her and it's getting darker. And last year was very dark. And now it looks like it's going to go even a little bit darker still. So that's coming back on USA starting on July 16th.
Yeah, it's, you know, just between all these shows, it's like between USA and AMC and, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of nice. You got a lot that you can watch for sure. So that's
yeah.
Very
cool.
Is absurdly good right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, it's zenith.
Well, yeah. And, you know, USA, they have some good ones. Suits is a good one. Burn Notice. I know that Murr has a problem with Sam Axe's opening statements about, you know, spies, bitchy little girls. let's see, Suits, Burn Notice, Necessary Roughness, Royal Pains, Covert Affairs. These are all good shows that USA has.
Well, I think with all that stuff, I think it's so much of the quality of television these days is sort of the opposite. We were talking recently in an episode with Mike Underwood about superhero movies, and you know, Patrick was sort of, you know, kind of complaining about the fact that it's like, oh, it's another origin story and retelling. And I think for many years on television, especially in the United States, it was, oh, well, people have to be able to tune in any episode and be able to sort of, you know, get it right away. So there is sort of a dumbing down that goes on when you approach every episode like that. And I think in the past few years, especially, people just realize, like, you know what, people DVR it or they watch it on Netflix or they watch it on DVD. So let's just tell one big story from start to finish, and consequently shows are much better now because every show builds on the next and everything's
good. Audience is capable of rising to the occasion. I think people forget.
And now we're at the point where it's so easy just to go and, you know, watch the first few episodes, and there's so many different ways you can go about getting it. So you don't have to tell the origin every single time, and you don't have to explain the characters every single time.
But it's funny that you mentioned that, because I remember just not too long ago when Alias was on, J.J. Abrams' Alias. You know, when they went to like the second or the third season, they added a voiceover in the beginning of her telling you exactly who she was and what was going on. And what the show was about. And Chuck did the same thing. You know, Chuck would do that. Chuck would talk like in the beginning. So there are some of those shows that still do that. But yeah, you know, it's almost like when we start using the, I want to say the BBC model, Mm-hmm. You know, the BBC model is 13 episodes, give or take. You know, and it's a complete series. Mm-hmm. And I think that works well. Like the killing season one, this big long thing, and then season two, and now they're into season three, and I've been watching that one too. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Don't spoil me on it. I've been mainlining the killing. Toronto has been really crazy politically recently. We had our mayor has been accused of being on video smoking crack cocaine.
Oh yeah.
Kid who was later shot. And stuff. And so like when I started when this particular scandal of his many scandals, he's a scandalous dude, quite literally. Mm-hmm. When that came out, I started watching The Killing, and oh my God, what a great show.
Yeah. Cause of the politician and all the stuff going on with him.
That's the connection which I realize I neglected to mention, but it's kind of a similar, like, you know, there are more and more layers to the story and to the involvement of city council and possible mayors and so on. And
if I'm not mistaken, The Killing season two did so poorly that they actually canceled it. And then for whatever reason,
they brought it back
and they're doing season three now. Yeah.
Well, I can see why. Cause like I've been in The Killing season two is like, in my opinion, and I'm not all the way through it, so don't spoil it. But like, in my opinion, it's like it plays almost as though they expected not to get that second season. Mm-hmm. So they had to quickly change their mind about how things were going to end in the season that they had. And so, and then they had to spin out crazier and crazier, storylines. Whereas, you know, if you had just done like one mystery per season,
yeah,
that would have been a little bit better. This goes back to
I was going to say, I hope they do that with season three.
Yeah, no, like, I would hope that it ends at the end of, like, that's the ending, and then they move on to something else. Like,
yes.
The thing about, this goes back to, like, what was wrong with, like, Twin Peaks season two, right? You know, it's the reverse. Like, they found, I guess someone would have thought that they, you know, that they were reversing what was wrong with Twin Peaks season two, which was finding out what happened to Laura. When you found out who killed Laura Palmer, all of that went awry, and I think that The Killing is tried to do that in season two, but in the reverse, where they tried to explain who might have killed Rosie Larson in the first season, and then had to quickly change their minds and keep that up in the air. And it's like, no, you had such a good answer. It was such a good answer before. It was a really good answer.
Mm-hmm. So Madeline, what is your pick this week then?
Well, in addition to The Killing, which I've been mainlining, which I recognize, The Killing is now, it should be on Netflix in America, but it's on Netflix in Canada, which is how I've been watching it. I just read a new book by Nick Cutter, which is a pseudonym for a Toronto writer of far more literary fare. But this is one of his horror projects, and it's by the name of Nick Cutter, and the book is called The Troop, and it's about a scout troop that is out on the Canadian Maritimes, and they see a man who is incredibly thin and who smells very strange, like a rotting corpse, and he stumbles into their camp, and he's incredibly hungry. And he's incredibly hungry because inside of him is a worm, a terrible, terrible bioengineered, possibly a weapon, possibly a diet pill worm. In fact, he's the host to an entire parasitic colony of worms. And that are eating him from the inside and forcing him to eat more and more and to eat things like dirt and rocks and tree bark because he's so hungry. And like, you know, the story unfolds it's compared a lot to Lord of the Flies, but really it's like if you combine like two Stephen King stories, Dreamcatcher and The Body, it would be more like that. It has that kind of Stand By Me vibe of like a bunch of kids out in the woods discovering who they really are, And it does have that, but it also has that Dreamcatcher kind of Cronenbergian body horror craziness. Like, seriously, there are parts of this novel where I was reading it on a plane and I was regretting the fact that airplanes do not have showers, because it was just so gross. Like, parts of it were just like, if you can't handle gore, don't bother reading it. Mm-hmm. But there are parts of it that are just so creepy and so gory that, like, I was just like, wow, I don't think he can do any worse than this. I don't think that there can be anything worse that happens here. Oh, wait, yes, it can. It can get worse.
Cool. So that's Nick Cutter, and the name of the book once again is?
The Troop.
The Troop. Very good. And quickly, my pick this week is Feedly. Feedly, as we talked about on a recent episode, Google Reader is going away. And if you were like many of us,
right,
Google Reader was the RSS reader that many people used. And Google is just deciding that they don't want to offer it anymore. So several different companies have been stepping up with their own readers. And Feedly was the one that I seemed to be seeing in various blog posts as a good alternative. And I've been using it for a bit. I have to say, I am really liking it. I will tell you this, that what I like about it, first of all, I liked the migration, which was you just put your
that was cool.
reader info, and then it's all there. You do have to play with it a little bit, because you have several different viewing modes, and you know, you can make it much more sort of magazine like, where you see a lot of pictures. You can make it look exactly like Google Reader pretty much if you want. I will say the few hiccups that I did have with it, and now because Feedly basically worked off of Google Reader, and now the Google Reader is going away, they're not going to be able to do that. So they've had to start their own cloud. And I know the past week or two, they're now migrating everybody to the cloud. And I have to say, I've seen a little bit of hiccups with that. Not anything too crazy, but a little bit of like, oh, I thought I looked at that article already and that's showing up again, that kind of thing. But that's sort of to be expected when you're sort of moving that much data over. But I do like it as an alternative to Google Reader, and I've had good experiences with it, and it integrates well with other applications I use in terms of like sending it over to Instapaper, which I use quite a bit, and Buffer. You know, it has the buttons for Buffer and Instapaper built right into it, and that's basically what I do. I sort of scan the feed through that, and if it's something I want to read, I put it on Instapaper, and if it's something I want to tweet out or Facebook out, I put it through Buffer. So it's working for me. I like the interface and everything, so it's good. There's some hiccups, but again, and I know there's other ones that are coming out. I know Dig is making a reader, and a couple of other. I just saw that AOL is doing something, so we'll see about that. But I will recommend Feedly. It's working for me. But let's move on to our main topic this week, and that is going to be conventions. You know, if you're in our community, you're going to be going to conventions either as a guest or just going to check it out if it's your local one or if something where you want to meet people and network. So Madeline, why don't you talk a little bit about conventions and, you know, sort of preparing and all that kind of stuff with conventions for yourself?
Well, for me, I'll be at Worldcon. I just left World Horror like last week. And then before that, there was another one. They kind of tend to run together in my mind because they're all inherently the same process and stuff. So, but I got my introduction to conventions by attending anime conventions out in the Seattle area where I grew up. And anime conventions are a way different beast. And they're actually kind of, I hate to say it, but they're kind of more fun because everybody is in costume. The crowd is a lot younger, and they're all like super enthusiastic. Like that bug that hits people in their 20s and their 30s, where suddenly you have to start hating everything, mm-hmm. Where nothing is good enough. That's not there. That spirit, that hipster kind of, that hipster irony is not necessarily there. You just get people who are pure enthusiasm and stuff. And it's actually really nice to spend time that way. So I recommend, if you've never been to an anime convention and you have somebody in your life who would like to go with them, because it's it is an experience unlike any other. When I started going to more like literary science fiction conventions or standard media and SF conventions in the Toronto area, like my home convention is basically Ad Astra and now SF Ontario and stuff, and it was briefly Polaris, but you know, we're seeing what happens with that and stuff. And I really was unfamiliar with the with the whole culture, and I was completely unprepared for how much energy they take from you, how much energy they require. If you are going to your first conventions this year, congratulations, welcome, have fun, that's great. But B, drink lots of water.
Mm-hmm.
Do drink the water that they provide for you. Those hotels are air conditioned. You wouldn't believe, you will have dry mouth inside of 20 minutes. And stuff. So do avail yourself of those facilities, and otherwise just be nice, and don't be too loud. Us old people need all the sleep we can get.
I'm trying to remember Gail's rules for cons. There's it's a number. It's Gail characters. Two and one. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I was gonna bring that up because I had that. I went, the first con I ever went to was PhilCon, which was not that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now. And I went to, because I'd never been to a con before, I went to the introduction to PhilCon, and they gave those numbers. Yeah, they gave those numbers where it was, I believe, and there's probably variations of it, but it was, make sure you eat 3 meals a day, mm-hmm. make sure you take 1 shower a day,
yeah.
make sure you get, I think it was 5 hours, at least 5 hours of sleep, because you were talking about, Madeline, with the anime, and PhilCon, I guess, had an anime track. It wasn't an anime convention. It was a general science fiction, but he's like, some folks really love the anime, and they go in there, and they'll sit and watch anime for 24 hours, and not eat, forget to eat, forget to go to sleep, forget to take a shower, all this kind of stuff, and people end up getting sick because they dehydrate themselves, they don't want to do that.
Everybody gets the con crud, right?
Yeah.
Three meals a day, one shower a day, and brush your teeth twice or something like that?
Something like that. But you know what? Of all those, it is very important to drink and stay hydrated and eat, but please take the shower.
Yeah, that's one I can highly recommend too. Because we're in close quarters,
and your hotel
gives you
soap.
We can tell when you don't.
Yes, yeah. And your hotel gives you soap.
Yeah. The recommendation that I can give for cons, I'm not a huge con goer. I've gone to them over the past 5 years or so, and I go to maybe 2 or 3 a year at this point, if I even go to that many. My first ones, I would just they were sort of local, and I would travel for the day and go early in the morning and then leave at night. And then I'd go to ones where I'd stay overnight, but I wouldn't stay necessarily in the con hotel. I'd stay to a hotel next to it. And yes, everyone's on a budget, and you do have to do whatever works for you. I could tell you the most fun that I've had at cons are the ones where I stay for at least 2 nights and I stay in the hotel that the con is at, because that's, to be honest with you, for me, and Patrick always jokes around with me, because when we went to World Fantasy a few years ago, I didn't actually go to any of the panels. I interviewed a bunch of people for the podcast, and I hung out in the bar. And that, to me, is sort of where the heart of the conventions are at, is really in just hanging out and talking and having fun. So if you're not in the hotel, it doesn't really lend itself to that. So
you're not getting the full experience, I would say.
Yeah.
And things are more convenient. The hotel staff is there to make things easy for convention goers. They're in it to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. So I can a great hotel can kind of make or break a convention. Really.
Right.
So here's what I do. And I've been to a couple World Cons now. When I get there, number one, I typically bring cereal bars or power bars or something like that. I bring them with me.
Yeah.
And I have them in my room or my backpack or whatever. And if you're on a budget and you can't afford to buy, the $15 hot dog, then you have the power bar or the breakfast bar. The other thing I do is I scope out immediately where can I get water and caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when I was in Chicago, there was a place. Oops, sorry, hold on. My Google thing just did something weird. When I was in Chicago for ShyCon, there was a place right at the bottom of the escalators that sold, coffee and water and stuff like that. And so I knew exactly where that was. So I could, at any point, you know, grab something, grab a snack, something like that. You just need to make sure, you know, scope these places out first. And some people go down, they'll go down to the Quickie Mart and they'll buy, you know, bottles of water and six packs of soda and all that kind of stuff, take it back to the room.
It's a good idea.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's a good idea because depending on how the con is run and where things are, you may not have easy access to that. And if you want to try to hit certain panels, you know, you might find yourself in a position where if you're a guest, you're on a bunch of panels in a row, and then maybe you want to see panels. So you may have three or four panels in a row, and then there's really no place to get food that's that close, or it's someplace where you have to get waiter service or something where you have to wait. Yeah. So you don't really have time to do it. So I know I've made that mistake at conventions where it's been 9 o'clock at night and I hadn't eaten since lunch. And it's like, oh, now I'm starving. And then you go to the bar and then you end up eating bar food at like 10 o'clock at night, which is part of the experience of being at a con too. But I think having the power poppers. I think having a power bar like in the middle, especially if you're on panels, and for me, like I've done performances there, and so I've done performances on an empty stomach because I'm just like, well, I don't have time to go get food, so I guess I'm just gonna, and I don't like to eat heavy before I perform anyway, but you know, it's good to have something little with you.
Need a little pop of energy.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I was gonna mention based on what something Madison before, I'm gonna be performing at Nerdtacular, which is in Salt Lake City. And that's in July. And that is one of the things I was talking to David Michael, who's been a friend of mine who was sort of putting a lot of that together. You know, he was telling me one of the things that they're doing there in terms of like the hotel being, because it's almost like a resort kind of place. It's really nice. He said, look, can we have this room as a gaming room, and can you keep it open 24 hours? And he said initially the hotel was like, well, we don't really want to keep it open 24 hours. And he was like, you're going to have people in the lobby gaming.
Yeah, like, no. Yeah.
I think it's in your best interest to like just have a room for them. And they're like, you know what? That's a good idea. Like, why don't we just have that room open 24 hours? We'll put out some water. We'll put out some stuff. He's like, because you're going to have people that are going to be playing round the clock. So, and the hotel was like, yeah, good idea. Because that's how people get when they're, they get into their gaming, they're getting into what have you. And, you know, well, and they.
As you can say, the other thing I want to throw out there, John, is as far as food and water and all that kind of stuff goes. They're typically the con, like Worldcon, will provide a room
a con
that has
suite,
that kind of stuff. The con suite. I have not had great luck with the con suite.
It's hit or miss, depending on where you're at. That's for sure.
Last year's World Fantasy was pretty amazing. That was the one in Toronto. Like, but they really like went out of their way to like they served complete meals essentially. Mm-hmm. Like they had meals catered in, and for the price of a ticket to World Fantasy, they had better.
Yeah.
Those are not inexpensive, that is non-trivial.
Neither is WorldCon.
So like and you get your money's worth.
Yeah, and I remember at WorldCon in Chicago, DiNardo and I and his family going down to the con suite, you know, because we were trying to figure out what to do for food, and there a lot of the options were closed, which I thought was just stupid. You know, they had their little food court downstairs, but the food court was closed on the weekend. What?
Yeah,
and so we're trying to find something to eat, and we're going to the con suite, and there was like crumbs. There was very little there, you know, and so we ended up having to leave the hotel and go wandering through downtown Chicago looking for food.
Mm-hmm.
I also at Chicon, whatever, wandered around outside the hotel room, but outside the hotel, which was actually a really rewarding experience. I loved being in Chicago. I guess I would add to this that. You know, in addition to like buying your own groceries, if you can, like when you check in, get into your room, put your things down, take your jacket off, whatever, figure out your room, and all that jazz. And then, also in addition to going out and buying groceries, go out and buy all of your alcohol, not all of your alcohol, but like go buy some alcohol. You will want to have some in your room, or you will want to have people in your room who would like some.
Yeah.
Most of the time. And you will not want to pay hotel prices for that.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Alcohol in America is fantastically cheap. It's like fantastically cheap compared to like Canadian prices or prices outside of the US in general and stuff. So just load up on that and like throw it in your room. And if you don't drink all of it, it is a wonderful tip for wait staff, for maid staff, for others. don't not cash tip them as well, but like you can just say like you can write a note. That's why they put the notepad in there. You can put a note. You can put leave a note with it and just say like, sorry, this is all for you and stuff.
Well, and the other thing I was going to throw out there is just a point of etiquette. If you're an author who's looking to be published, when you come to one of these big cons, the best rule of thumb is for you to print your manuscript out and go up to the editors and publishers that you really want and just give it to them and ask them to read it right then and there. Okay. That works wonders. They love that shit. And if you can get your favorite authors, you know, backed into a corner, they love it when you give them your manuscript too. I mean, it's just, it's perfect. So please, by all means, do that so that the rest of us have a better chance of getting our stuff published.
good advice. And well, why don't we wrap it up there? Madeline, I know you have two books out. You have VN and ID will be out as this airs. So why don't you tell people your website, your Twitter. Obviously, we talked about you're going to be at Worldcon. But anything else you want to let our listeners know before we go?
Let's see. I'm at MadelineAshby.com and you can see me on Twitter at Madeline Ashby, and it's Ashby as in Alpha Sierra Hotel Bravo Yellow. People kind of sometimes get confused about that. I don't know. I slur my words a lot, so that might have something to do with it, I imagine. What else? I will be at Worldcon. ID should be out June 25th. If you like robots and you like dark stories and you like, you know, a lot of sex and violence, then these are the stories for you. If you want to read something that you know your mom would have hated you to read as a kid, this would be that story.
Well, I can't think of a better way to recommend a book to somebody than even that. So again, VN and ID out, MadelineAshby.com and at Madeline Ashby. For me this week, you know, just have my tunes out there, my instrumental stuff and my vocal stuff. It's over at JohnAnilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at JohnAnilio. Patrick is at ATFMB.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at ATFMB. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Yay! After 15 years in space, Cord Cahill is returning home. His parents passed long ago, his younger brother is off defending border worlds from the expanding Republic, and his sister, whom he left behind, is dead. How she died, he doesn't know, but she left him a video message predicting her own death, and he wants to know what would drive her to do such a thing. His homeworld has changed, but so has Cord, who now wears the gray cloak and hat of a sentinel. They mark him for what he is, a gun for hire. But this isn't about Cord. It's about family, about Katie, how she lived, and ultimately, how she died. Cahill's Homecoming, the new novella from Patrick Hester. Available for Kindle at Amazon.com and as an EPUB from BarnesandNoble.com. Cahill's Homecoming. It's about family.
A million the world outsiders, night blindness, can't see. Your bright eyes are what the time is, 25 past eternity. Here listening to the siren coming closer, now further away. What we gonna do when the money runs out? I wish that there was something left to say. Where we gonna find the eyes to see a brighter day? I'm sick of all begging basket full of bombs. Honey, please don't stop. Y'all talking, 'cause there's a feeling won't leave me alone. What we gonna do when the money runs out? I wish that there was something I could say.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.